Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
And it is Tuesday, which means it's time for Ask the Doctors, where we attempt to answer your coronavirus questions. Wondering how to find and pay for home tests? Do you have questions about kids in school right now? Masking? Whether or not you need another booster, a first booster? Give us a call. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Joining us this week, Dr. Sabrina Asumu, who is an infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center and an assistant professor at Boston University School of Medicine, and Dr. Philip Landrigan, practicing pediatrician, epidemiologist, and director of the Program for Global Public Health and the Common Good at Boston College. Dr. Asumu, welcome back.
Thank you for having me on.
And Dr. Landrigan, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you, TCN. Our pleasure.
Dr. Asumu, I'm just going to start and kind of check in with you. We've been talking with you for a good portion of this pandemic now. How are you doing?
I'm tired. I really, you know, as you mentioned multiple times when I've been on, I have been a huge champion and advocate of these vaccines. They work really well, but to be honest, I really thought we were going to be further along than where we are today with the Omicron variant. But, you know, cases are coming down, at least in the Boston area. So I'm trying to remain optimistic, and I'll continue to recommend these vaccines so that we can all get to the new normal.
Dr. Landrigan, I'll turn to you, too. You're a practicing pediatrician. So many worries about kids right now, especially kids under five who still cannot be vaccinated. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. But as my colleague said, it's been a long haul, and we're all getting fatigued. But I draw hope from two things. Firstly, I've been tracking very closely the data from the Massachusetts Water Resources Authority, the MWRA. They've got this system, I'm sure you've read about, where they're tracking coronavirus excretion in wastewater. In other words, in sewage, they're measuring levels of the virus. And we're seeing the levels of virus in the sewage in Greater Boston going down. 2 weeks ago, they were going steeply up. Now they're starting down. So I think that confirms the clinical impression that maybe we're about to turn the corner or turning the corner. Secondly, I join my colleague in underscoring how important these vaccines are. Yep, they don't completely protect against upper respiratory infections. We have breakthrough infections in people who've been fully vaccinated and even boosted. But what the vaccines do with amazing efficacy is they prevent hospitalizations and death. They're something like 98% protective against hospitalization, 98% protective against death. So anybody who has not yet chosen to get vaccinated, anybody in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts who's not yet chosen to get a booster, I urge you to please reconsider your decision, consider the people around you, the elders, the children, everybody with whom you come in contact, and if you can possibly persuade yourself to get vaccinated, please do. So that's so critically important.
So both of you, continuing the strong get vaccinated, get boosted message there. I think we should just jump straight to the phones. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. To ask your question of Drs. Asumu and Landrigan. We've got Ken on the line in Arlington. Ken, go ahead with your question.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here. I've had a breakthrough case of COVID. I got my vaccines and boosted a while back. In a household of three people, the other two people managed not to get COVID, and a lot of that was to do with masking up inside the house on my part and staying sort of remote in a house that's big enough to isolate. My doctor's advice was to basically quarantine for a total of 10 days from the point at which symptoms onset, and that's coming up tomorrow. But they also told me that if I was to take another home rapid test, which initiated all this, that it would likely or possibly also tell me that I'm still positive. And that makes me feel a little nervous about recirculating and just looking for some advice on that sort of issue.
So Ken, just first, personally, I've been through the 10 days of isolation in the house after a breakthrough case. Good for you for sticking it out. I know what a commitment that is, and my heart goes out to you. Let me turn to you, Dr. Sabrina Asumu. Ken is asking specifically about the rapid home tests, which are the antigen tests you take at home. Last week, Dr. Shira Daronen asked the doctor, said no need to take one after 10 days of isolation regardless. Ken's a little worried that if he did take one, he might still show up positive. Is he safe to go out after 10 days of isolation tomorrow?
So first of all, I'll start by saying, first of all, thank you for getting vaccinated, for getting boosted. I'm sorry that you had an infection after vaccination, but in terms of how you protected your household, thank you for getting vaccinated. So first of all, even before the guidelines, the most recent guidelines from CDC and the changes about whether or not you needed to have testing done afterwards, we have actually really good data showing that if you were to use that, you know, 10 days after symptoms, and in terms of being able to come out of isolation, that's actually a very good time point for which even if you isolate any virus, it's not one that we believe that would be causing infection in someone else.
So after 10 days, you're just not going to give it to someone else.
Exactly. At nine. So let me just clarify this, because people would say like there's a lot of nuance in general. But in a healthy person, after around 9 to 10 days, even if you were to do a PCR and you isolated any genetic information, this is not genetic information that's going to be transmitted to anyone or cause any trouble. It's not going to be live virus, number one. And then number two, the distinction that I want to make is that the rapid test that you use at home is actually very different from the PCR test that I just talked about, for which we have really good data. The antigen test is looking for surface protein on the virus. And that one, after 10 days, we don't really expect it to be there. I will be very shocked. Usually after 5 days, it usually goes up and comes down. So I can tell you that you actually follow the old guidance. And after 10 days, we feel pretty reassured that most people are fine to come out of isolation. And we're not really concerned that they're going to transmit viable virus that we should be worried about.
And
so
just,
I think you're fine.
And just to clarify, Dr. Asumu, the newer CDC guidance is that after 5 days, if your symptoms have gone away or are subsiding and you have been fever-free for at least 24 hours, you can go back out as long as you stay masked around other people for another 5 days, correct?
Exactly. The newer guidance is trying to decrease that isolation time by saying 5+, you know, additional masking, 5+ additional. But if you're doing 10 days already, you already did more than what we're asking you to do right now. So I think that you're okay. You do not need to test, especially after 10 days. I think that if your symptoms are better and you feel better, I think you're fine. Thank you for doing your part.
There you go, Ken. Let's take another call here, 800-423-8255. We've got Roop in Shrewsbury. Roop, go ahead.
Hi, doctor. Thank you for all you're doing. My question is, I got the single dose J&J vaccine in spring last year. And then in November, I got a Moderna booster, which means I have gotten 2 shots in total. I'm a healthy 45-year-old. My question is, am I well protected given that I have only received 2 shots at the end of all of this?
Dr. Landrigan, so many questions like this from people whose initial vaccination was Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah. Sabrina, I wonder if I could ask Dr. Sabrina to field that one.
Dr. Asumu, jump in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're like in the same bucket as my mother. She's 75. You know, we told her, get the first vaccine that you have. She got the J&J. And then we, you know, the additional guidance and data that we have was to, if you did get J&J, you should get that additional dose. And she did exactly what you did. She got an mRNA vaccine. So the current CDC guidance is saying that if you got J&J, you should get, you know, another vaccine, either a J&J or another mRNA, to get that good protection. And that's actually what the CDC is recommending now. And I think that that's actually a really reasonable recommendation from now. And the reason why I'm saying this is because the J&J, although it's one shot, one of the things that we've realized is that with that one shot, you're able to activate memory T and B cells, which you need actually two mRNA vaccines to do. So it does that in one shot. We knew that it didn't perform as well initially, but then when you get that second mRNA dose, according to the CDC and their current guidance, it is going to protect you and provide some good protection right now. So I think that right now you're following the guidance.
So J&J for the first, and then you said the second dose, especially if it's an mRNA. So that would be either the Moderna or the Pfizer for your booster after the original J&J shot.
Exactly. Or according to CDC, you can do another J&J. Like, for instance, some people maybe are allergic to the components of the mRNA vaccines. And so if they do J&J and J&J, according to their current guidance from CDC, they're actually up to date with their vaccination.
So thank you, Dr. Asumu. Dr. Landrigan, I want to turn to you on a question, not from a caller, but that came to us earlier in the day, and I wanted to make sure to ask. More and more, we are hearing guidance that it's not just that you mask, but how you mask. KN95, N95, double masking with a surgical mask and another mask. Those masks can be expensive and uncomfortable. So what are sort of the baseline to supreme levels of acceptable protection in masks right now, given the transmissibility of the Omicron variant of COVID-19?
Yeah, very, very important question that comes up all over the place. So the first principle here is that any mask is better than no mask. Any mask prevents the spread of the virus from one person to another. The second fundamental principle is that any mask is more effective if it fits tightly on a person's face than if it fits loosely. So in other words, if there's an air gap around the edge of the mask, virus can get in and virus can get out. So it's very important to fit that mask properly. That's a basic principle that we've learned from people who work in occupational medicine. Now, when it comes to the masks themselves, my basic rule of thumb is that any mask which is approved by NIOSH, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, is a good mask to go. NIOSH-approved masks meet federal standards. There are some other masks out there that look like NIOSH-approved masks but are not NIOSH masks. They're still better than no masks, but they're not as good as the NIOSH masks.
And how does one find out, like, you know, you're shopping for masks at a drugstore or at an online vendor, how do you find out if the mask is accepted by or approved by NIOSH?
Most vendors stamp it on there because they're very proud of the designation.
All right. All right, that's very helpful. Thanks. I'm just watching these calls pop up. There are a bunch of them, so I'm going to go back to the phones, 800-423-8255. I'd like to go to Olga in Tewksbury. Olga, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I listen to this show every Tuesday. So I have a question, and I'm not sure if I frame it correctly, but I took both shots of Pfizer. I have a vaccine injury. And in the time that, like, from the first to second shot, I think the doctors were still sort of sorting out. And now there's, like, more and more evidence, but it's getting more common after, you know, they're seeing more of this. And I was just curious, like, how are you as doctors, like, there's the CDC and there's VAERS, but how are you collecting and sharing, you know, things that people are seeing that, you know, aren't just side effects like fever, but things that can affect people's lives? Like, how are you really making sure that you're collecting and sharing that data in real time, so that we can learn more about these vaccines?
Thank you for that question, Olga. And Dr. Asumu, an important question, especially as we know, you know, people are concerned about health and safety with these vaccines. Information is important. So what is the tracking? And at Boston Medical Center, where you are, what is the tracking on side effects from vaccines?
You know, that's a very, very important question. So usually, you know, as clinicians, if there are any... Because these vaccines are so new, we're very vigilant. And so any side effects that come up, we usually report them to VAERS. Because actually, if you think about how some of the reactions to the vaccines right now were discovered, either for, you know, the blood clots or even the myocarditis, it was through VAERS, you know, the CDC looks through and looks to see if there are any signals, and then they go ahead and investigate it a little further. So we clinicians do it. And then if I talk to other patients or other individuals or family members, if they have any reactions, I encourage them to report it and to VAERS, because that is how the CDC can actually look for signals. So that's how we're doing it.
And Dr. Osumu, to your knowledge, to the best of your understanding, roughly what percentage of people who get a vaccine have some kind of serious side effect from the vaccine? Are we talking about 0.5%, a fraction of a percent, 10%? Do we know? Rough orders of magnitude.
I mean, the serious side effects that we're kind of monitoring for, right? The ones that, either the myocarditis or like the thrombosis, they're really uncommon. They're, depending on which ones you're talking about, we're talking the magnitude of like one and about, 50,000 or, they're really uncommon. And it also depends on what age group you're talking about. You know, the blood clots that we were worried about, it was more common in like young women, or like the myocarditis has been more common in like 16, 17 year olds. So depending on what age group you're talking about, these side effects could be, more or less. But, especially when you look at myocarditis, when CDC looked at all the inflammation, the benefits of the vaccine really outweighed the risk, because you're actually more likely to get myocarditis from COVID-19 itself than you are from a vaccine.
Thanks for that clarification. 800-423-8255. You are listening to Ask the Doctors on Radio Boston with Drs. Sabrina Osumu, who you just heard, and Dr. Philip Landrigan of Boston College. Susan's on the line in Hudson, New Hampshire. Go ahead with your question, Susan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I am fully vaccinated and boosted. My fiance tested positive 5 days after my last at-home test, which was 8 days into having COVID, and it was negative. We isolated when I had COVID, and we are isolating now. He's on day 7. But I am just curious if, while they say that I am one of the safer people to be around as I am vaccinated and boosted and have had COVID just recently, is it likely that I can, if we weren't to isolate, carry COVID and spread to somebody?
So, Susan, how many days ago was day 0 for you, just so we understand? 15 days?
Yes.
Okay, so Dr. Landrigan, Susan is now living with someone who actively has COVID. She is 15 days out from a breakthrough case, from day 0 of her breakthrough case. Should she be concerned that she can still get it from the other person living in her home, or spread it outside? And Dr. Osumu, I feel like you touched on some of the second part of that a few minutes ago. But Dr. Landrigan, what can you tell Susan?
I think the risk is low here. You've just had it. That means that you're already fully vaccinated, so your antibody levels are high. I think the risk to you is perhaps not zero, but it's extremely low. You said your fiancé is now 7 days out. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Right. So in another, he's at the point now where, according to CDC guidelines, he can go outside with a mask, right? He's more than 5 days. He's between 5 and 10 days. So he can actually go cautiously outside with a mask, but as can you.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Landrigan. I'm going to pick up David here in Scituate. David, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, hi. I contracted COVID about a year ago, recovered from it, and I haven't had any taste or smell since then. But in the last 4 months, I've had this thing where everything tastes and smells horrible. And I know there's a lot of people that are properly suffering from that. And I'm just wondering, there doesn't seem to be any clearinghouse or any information on when and if my taste and smell will ever return.
That's discouraging, David. I'm sorry to hear it. Dr. Osumu, what do we know about loss of taste and smell? We have heard these stories about people not only who don't get it back for a very long time, but when they do, everything tastes and smells bad. We're what? We're more than 2 years in now. Do we have enough, length of information to know how this turns out for someone like David?
Yeah, no, this is actually, you're right. Like, that's a really long time not to have taste and smell. Just trying to think about enjoying some of your favorite foods. So I'm sorry to hear that. This is something that we're still studying, and we're trying to figure out, for some people, they get this their sense of smell or taste back, you know, sooner than others. But for unfortunately, some people, it seems to be taking a little bit longer. But I'm actually going to use this opportunity to make sure and encourage you to get vaccinated, because there's actually a study that came out. It's only a preprint, but it was following people who had either been vaccinated or unvaccinated, or who had two doses, or even more than, you know, who had been boosted, and they're looking at their symptoms after getting COVID-19. And it still needs to be peer reviewed, but it showed that some people can actually have improvement in their symptoms after getting vaccinated. So again, we're still studying. We don't really know how long some people are going to have these disturbances and sense of smell or taste, but we have some encouraging data showing that by actually getting vaccinated, some of the symptoms after COVID can actually be improved. So get vaccinated if you haven't.
So Dr. Landergan, in our last minute or so, turning back to you as a pediatrician, for those families still waiting for their youngest to be vaccines to be authorized for emergency use, what are you watching? When might that be?
Well, clinical trials in young children under the age of 5 are going on. I know the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and CDC are monitoring them. We had actually hoped that they would have come in late 2021, but they've not. It's taken them longer than expected. And all I can say is we need to be patient. It's good that FDA and CDC are taking their time. They're getting it right. They're making sure that the vaccines are both safe and effective. And I'm sure that as soon as they have the data, they will have it out on the street the next day. But they can't move until they have the data.
So we just don't know.
We just don't know. We hope it's soon, but we just don't know.
Oh, I feel bad for parents with the littlest kids.
Oh, it's,
but
it's tough.
Including
it's
me.
Yeah. All right. And on that note, listen, for those of you who are in the phone queue, and there are many of you, I'm sorry we didn't get to your calls today. We will do Ask the Doctors again next Tuesday, so continue to listen. Also, we will have the head of Brown's School of Public Health and physician Dr. Ashish Jha on the show tomorrow to have some tough conversation about our state of communication and our state of understanding of where we are. So tune into that tomorrow as well. Dr. Sabrina Asumu, assistant professor of medicine at Boston University School of Medicine, also an infectious disease specialist at Boston Medical Center. Thanks so much to you.
Thank you for having me on.
And Dr. Philip Landergan, pediatrician, public health physician, epidemiologist, director of the Program for Global Public Health and the Common Good at Boston College. Thanks as always to you as well.
Thank you, Tiziana.